From Pacifica Radio, this is Democracy Now!
Have you ever met Mr. Guy Philippe before he returned to Haiti?
No, I've never met him.
Have you ever met Mr. Emmanuel Constant?
No, I haven't.
Did you know that he was the head of FRAP?
I've heard that.
Did you know that Mr. Chamblain was his right hand?
I've heard that from you.
Did you know that Mr. Constant was hired and worked for the CIA?
No, I don't know that.
House members question Roger Noriega on Haiti. We'll hear excerpts of the fiery hearing and speak with Congress members Maxine Waters and Barbara Lee, who blasted Noriega yesterday for a full 5 minutes. And we'll go to Bangui of the Central African Republic to speak with the journalists there about President Aristide's situation. Is he being held prisoner? And from Haiti to Venezuela, is President Hugo Chavez next? We'll look at how the U.S. government has spent over $1 million in what Chavez supporters say is another attempt to overthrow a democratically elected president.
Recently, declassified documents show that the National Endowment for Democracy is financially sustaining the opposition movement in Venezuela.
All that and more coming up. Welcome to Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman. The 15-member Caribbean community of CARICOM has called for an independent investigation into the charge that Haitian President Jean-Bertrand Aristide was kidnapped by U.S. forces. Jamaican Prime Minister and CARICOM Chair P.J. Patterson said, quote, "Several of us were in touch with Aristide until very late Saturday night. Nothing that was said to us indicated the president was contemplating a resignation." Meanwhile, the armed gangs led by Guy Philippe have reportedly agreed to lay down their arms following requests from the U.S. One day after he said he was Haiti's military commander, Guy Philippe announced he's disarming his fighters and returning to Cape Haitian. According to the Miami Herald, the international force in Haiti now totals about 850 U.S. soldiers, 500 French police and troops, and about 60 Canadians. The force is expected to grow up to about 5,000 members in coming weeks. Meanwhile, interim President Boniface Alexandre moved into the National Palace and announced on radio that he would serve for only 3 months. In campaign news here, the race between John Kerry and President Bush began in earnest yesterday after Kerry's chief opponent, Senator John Edwards, dropped out of the race. Edwards praised Kerry as a man, quote, of great strength and great courage. Meanwhile, President Bush began a two-day fundraising spree through California where he hopes to raise $5 million. Political analysts estimate President Bush's campaign currently has about $100 million more than Kerry. The Bush campaign announced yesterday the launch of what may be the most expensive advertising campaign in presidential history. Three of the four new ads feature images of the smoldering and charred shell of the World Trade Center that was left standing. The International Association of Firefighters, which supports Mr. Kerry, criticized the ads, saying, quote, "Bush is calling on the biggest disaster in our country's history, and indeed in the history of the fire service, to win sympathy for his campaign." Bush also spoke last night at a $25,000 a plate fundraiser for Republican National Committee dinner at the home of a Gerald Perenchio. The Washington Post reports the dinner raised $3.5 million for the RNC. Perenchio is the billionaire sports promoter and chair of the Spanish-language media giant Univision. Last year, the Justice Department and Federal Communications Commission gave him a near monopoly over the Spanish-language media by approving the merger between Univision and the Hispanic Broadcasting Corporation. In New York, Attorney General Elliot Spitzer announced on Wednesday New York state law forbids the issuing of same-sex marriage licenses, but it does require the state to recognize same-sex marriages performed elsewhere. Gay rights organizations said Spitzer's ruling was monumental. David Buckel, a marriage project director for Lambda Legal, said, quote, New York State became the first state in the nation to clarify that same-sex marriages performed out of state will be respected here. Meanwhile, the mayor of New York town of Nyack announced his town would go ahead and become the state's second to begin solemnizing marriages between same-sex couples. The mayor of New Paltz, Jason West, was charged earlier this week on 19 counts of violating the state's marriage laws. Last night, he pled not guilty. And in Oregon, more than 200 same-sex couples received marriage licenses on Wednesday, on the first day that Multnomah County recognized same-sex marriage. Here in New York City, Bloomberg administration lawyers formally declared that the city will not issue marriage licenses to same-sex couples, even as gay advocates prepared to descend on City Hall today to demand wedding applications. In news from China, a longtime Chinese human rights activist who helped organize the Tiananmen Square protests was released from prison today. In 1998, he'd been sentenced to 11 years after he helped start the China Democracy Project. A German court has ordered the retrial of a Moroccan man who was convicted last year of aiding the Hamburg cell of the 911 hijackers. The case had marked the only conviction connected to the 911 attacks. The retrial was ordered after the man's attorneys accused the U.S. of refusing to allow the testimony of a member of al-Qaeda in U.S. custody. Jose Padilla was allowed to meet with his attorneys for the first time since he was declared an enemy combatant nearly 2 years ago for allegedly plotting to set off a dirty bomb. Padilla is a U.S. citizen. He has not been charged with a crime and has been barred from seeing any evidence against him. His attorney said they could not talk about his case because the conversation was being monitored and recorded by naval officials. The world's second-largest reinsurer, Swiss Re, warned yesterday that the costs of natural disasters aggravated by global warming threaten to spiral out of control, forcing the human race into catastrophe of its own making. The company estimated that the costs of such disasters will double in the next 10 years. The Guardian of London's reporting, Pakistan yesterday offered to share military assistance, including nuclear power, with Nigeria. The news comes just a month after the mastermind behind Pakistan's nuclear weapons program, AQ Khan, admitted publicly he'd run a black market in nuclear weapons materials to Iran, Libya, and North Korea.
C'est la vie difficile pour qu'à joindre côté pour dormir ou plutôt souffrir. Monsieur Apelouye, est-ce que c'est ça ou le plutôt courir à quel content? Pas s'envelopper dans le chagrin.
Aïe, 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 méchant.
Méchant, ma chère.
Aïe, 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 alors méchant.
Avec la vie, au moins du méchant.
Aïe,
méchant, ma chère.
Aïe, 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 alors méchant.
Alors méchant.
Amy here on Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
And good day to all of our listeners and viewers around the nation. Well, congressional Democrats attacked the Bush administration's handling of the crisis in Haiti yesterday and questioned whether the United States overthrew the government of President Jean-Bertrand Aristide. Assistant Secretary of State Roger Noriega was the main target of the grilling yesterday at a hearing of the House International Relations Subcommittee on the Western Hemisphere. This came as Aristide and and his wife Mildred made another round of phone calls to Congress members and their friends. They continue to say that they were kidnapped and that Aristide was overthrown in a coup d'etat facilitated by the United States.
We're going to start off by playing excerpts of yesterday's House hearing. We begin with New Jersey Congressmember Donald Payne questioning Assistant Secretary of State Roger Noriega.
Let me ask you, Mr. Noriega. As you know, the CIA paid and protected the FRAP death squad people in the old days. And I'd like to know what you know about Guy Philippe. It's alleged he was trained by the U.S. military in Ecuador. Do you know anything about that?
No.
No, okay. Let me say that, that do you have any knowledge of why the DR, Dominican Republic, they haven't been having any outside problems with foreign countries in quite a while, right?
I don't, I, no, sir.
Well, they weren't going to be invaded by Iraq, no, right? But let me ask you a question. Why would then the U.S. ship 35,000 weapons, 20,000 guns that were sold to the DR recently? Do you have any idea why there would be so much weaponry going into? And I'm asking the question because, as you know, the rebels have a lot of U.S.-made weapons. I think they have some a lot of M-16s, M-60s. They have rocket-propelled launchers. And we know that 20,000 weapons were sent by the U.S. to the DR. I don't know the date, but you don't know anything about it. You honestly don't know anything about... You're in charge of Latin America, and you don't know about these 35,000 alleged...
No, I've never...
Okay. And you never heard of any training in Ecuador, Mr. Noriega?
I've heard the accusation reference. I don't know that it's true.
Assistant Secretary of State Roger Noriega being questioned by New Jersey Congressmember Donald Payne. Later in the hearing, Republican Florida Congressmember Mark Foley addressed Mr. Noriega.
Congressman Wexler and I share the same district, and we have a newspaper, the Palm Beach Post, the most liberal probably of any newspaper in Florida. They have never printed a kind word about President Bush or his brother, Governor Bush. But let me read you today's editorial. A delusional Aristide. Jean-Bertrand Aristide can accuse the United States of many things, but depriving him of an opportunity to bring democracy to Haiti isn't one of them. The U.S., in conjunction with France and the Organization of American States, helped Mr. Aristide to leave the country. Though his destination wasn't clear when the plane took off, the action protected Mr. Aristide and his family. It might have prevented a bloodbath. His departure decreased the chance that armed criminals masquerading as rebels will take control and increased the chance that an international effort can move Haiti toward democratic elections. Now, that's by an observer, the Palm Beach Post. I hear a lot of things about a gentleman being kidnapped, spirited away in the middle of the night, and we will have plenty of time to ferret those issues out. But there's one thing for certain. Haiti needs our help. And this administration has stepped up to the plate. Now, I can read testimony. Randall Robinson and I were on CNN the other day, and he's making wild accusations about this kidnapping. Mr. Robinson's wife's paid some $300,000 by the Haiti government to represent them in matters of public relations. This is what he said about President Clinton. Civil rights lobbyist Randall Robinson said he opposed President Clinton because he had exhausted all patience with President Clinton's failed, insensitive, and ultimately racist policy in Haiti. And it goes on about the president's flip-flop on Haiti, indifference, sending in troops, no, maybe I won't. So we can continue to have this political dialogue and see who we can blame. I personally take the word of Secretary Colin Powell over this man. He has had ample opportunity to help his people with aid from this country and others. France, Canada would not invest one nickel or one body to save this man's failed presidency. The State Department's International Narcotics Control Strategy Report of 2003, 2002, and 2001 established the senior officials throughout the Haitian government, including the Haitian National Police, Presidential Security Unit, and Aristide's Palace Guards, were actively involved in drug trafficking. These reports established that light aircraft landing with drug cargoes on Route 9 in Port-au-Prince are actively helped by Haitian National Police, who blocked traffic and helped with offloading the drugs and providing ground transportation. Let me read you another thing that's very, very important and I'd like you to comment on. The 2003 State Department Human Rights Report for Haiti confirms that there were credible reports of extrajudicial killings by members of the Haitian National Police, municipal government officials, and civilian attachés associated with the HNP, Haitian National Police. In 1994, the United States used military force to restore Aristide to office. One of the compelling reasons for using force to restore Aristide was that the military regime was using civilian attachés to terrorize the population, particularly Aristide supporters. Aristide, it turns out, has been using civilian attachés to terrorize the population, particularly his political opponents. What does this use of attachés say about the Aristide government's commitment to the rule of law?
Thank you very much, Congressman Foley. And I will pass on to our staff the statements of gratitude for the work they are doing to help Haiti. The report and the references to the human rights violations are written by professionals at the State Department, and they make a compelling point, which is we do not choose who runs various countries. So we don't choose who we recognize as constitutionally elected leaders, but we do have to have an obligation to choose where we put American lives at risk. And in this case, we made a decision based on what we know about President Aristide after years of trying that it was not an effective, sustainable political solution to merely prop him up. Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman.
Assistant Secretary of State Roger Noriega talking to Florida Congressmember Mark Foley. Congressional Black Caucus members Charles Rangel and Maxine Waters provided the most heated questioning of Noriega. We begin with Congressmember Rangel, and then we'll move on to Congressmember Waters. We will then be joined live by Congressmember Waters talking about what she learned yesterday. And then we will go to the Central African Republic to speak with a reporter going to the country where Congressmember, where Jean-Bertrand Aristide is being held with his wife. First, a break. This is Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez as we continue with the House International Relations Subcommittee on the Western Hemisphere. Congressional Black Caucus members Charles Rangel and Congressmember Maxine Waters questioned Assistant Secretary of State Roger Noriega today. We will begin with Congressmember Rangel.
You had indicated that you would not deal with these rogues and thugs that were part of the all militia and, I guess, the non-civilian part of the opposition. But there did come a time where these roving thugs were approaching the palace and that our government thought that President Aristide was in danger of his life and his family.
Pardon me, sir. I didn't hear the last part of that.
Did there come a time that the United States government thought that these rogues, these thugs, these armed criminals were approaching the palace and that President Aristide and his family would be in danger.
Yes, there did.
And as you said, that we did not think it was appropriate to put our military in harm's way to shore up his safety.
That was a decision
right.
we made.
And so, therefore, we communicated that to President Aristide, that he could not depend on us to protect him against these thugs, these criminals, these rogues.
That's essentially correct, yes. We told him that through public statements that we were
and
not
as a result
to
of this, President Aristide thought that it was in his best interest and the best interest of the Haitians for him to leave.
Yes, sir.
And we facilitated that leaving.
Yes, sir, we did.
And we did take him out of Haiti.
At his request.
Now, yes. And he requested it because he was fearful of his life and other Haitians that would die as a result of the information we gave him, right?
I think it wasn't necessarily just the information we gave him, but I think
it encouraged him to leave, I would think.
If you read his resignation letter, that's the reason, I think.
Well, I want to know, if someone leaves a country that's elected because he's fearful of his life, is that not a coup d'etat?
I don't think so, sir.
Well, that's what's explained in the dictionary. How would you describe a coup d'etat? Here's a man that's informed by the United States government that we cannot protect him and the rebels, the thugs, the criminal are going to come and they're going to kill him and his family and the Haitians would die. Do you want to leave? He says, yes, you make him leave. Why is that not a coup d'etat?
We didn't make him leave, sir.
I didn't say you made him leave. He asked to leave.
At the very end, you said, and you make him leave.
You helped him to leave, I meant to say. Forgive me.
At his request.
At his request, he begged you to help him to leave, to get out of there so he would not get killed and his family, because he feared that these rebel forces that we informed him would kill him and other Haitians, and he left. Now, why is that not a coup d'etat?
It isn't a traditional, what I would regard as a traditional coup d'etat.
Tell me the difference. Here's a guy running for his life. Here comes the military. They're armed. They got to kill him. We know it. We tell him that. He says, please get me out of here. We get him out of there. Why is that not a coup d'etat?
He resigned, sir.
Now, did we ask him to resign?
No, we didn't. We told him that if he needed to leave, if he were...
Be very careful, Mr. Noriega.
We told him
Because it's reported, did we ask him to resign? Was that a condition of helping him to leave the country?
We told him that for us to be able to facilitate
his
departure.
Yes, of course, that's easy.
We did not want to have a situation.
You didn't want to have a situation,
told him that unless he resigned, we
would not be able to facilitate his departure.
We wanted to have some sort of sustainable political.
I didn't
solution.
Ask the reasons, Mr. Noriega.
Well, sir,
I'm just asking you this. Please
Charlie,
help
if I
me.
May say something, Charlie, you ought to give him a chance to answer at least one question before you throw another one.
But this is such a simple one here. As a condition of assisting this man, saving his life, that of his family, one of the conditions of helping him was that he resign. Is that not true?
We did not want to have a situation where...
Oh, Mr. Chairman.
Make him answer.
Well, if you listen to the answer, it might satisfy
yes
you.
No, now my time has got to expire.
No, sir, that's not fair. Well,
if he had not signed that letter of resignation, would you have helped him to leave the country?
Probably, yes. In the final analysis,
but you told him at that time he was told that he had to resign in order to leave the country.
I think in the humanitarian interest, particularly since his wife is an American citizen. We would have been prepared to take
But him. You told him that he had to resign if he wanted to leave the country.
We told him, because we wanted to have a sustainable solution where we could avoid bloodshed, that where we could be... Where
and
we
twice he was asked for that resignation, and he would not have left unless he signed it. Is that correct?
We wanted to be able to have... A basis, a
but you would not have taken
political solution.
But you told him that unless he signed it, he could not leave the country.
We wanted to have a sustainable political solution, and the only way to be able to put that.
And without that resignation, it would have been a coup d'etat by anyone's standard.
Time's expired.
We have the letter of resignation, sir. That he
you sure left. Did, and I would have signed one too.
Okay, Mrs. Waters.
Thank you very much, Mr. Chairman. I thank you for allowing those of us who are not members of the committee to be here today. I want you to know that Several of you, including you, Mr. Chairman, have said that it's a fabrication, that he was forced out, that there was no coup d'etat, he was not kidnapped. I talked to President Aristide this morning. He called me, and he maintained that he was forced out, he was literally kidnapped, he did not go of his own will, so I want to put that on the record. Secondly, I want to put on the record that I've been to Haiti three times since January 1, and I've met with the opposition, that is Mr. Appé Jr. and some of those from the Committee of 184, and talked to many people about what was going on. In addition to that, I was in Haiti a week ago this past Saturday, where you came and led the delegation of the international community, where Mr. Aristide signed off on the CARICOM proposal. So I want to put that on the record. But I'm very interested in some things that you've said, and I do want yes or no answers. Don't take up my time. I want to know, you have said that you have no responsibility to protect a head of state. Are you going to protect the new Chief Justice that was just sworn in, who's now the head of state of Haiti, or not?
We believe that he is part of
this. Are you going to protect him or not, yes or no?
Yes, we are, because
did you refuse to protect Mr. Aristide, who was then head of state, so you have a different standard for these two? Is that correct?
We believe
that's
that.
All I want to know, yes
men,
or no.
These are very different men and very
so,
different political
yes,
solutions. And
yes, for the Chief Justice, no for Mr. Aristide. So you don't have a policy that is consistent about having no responsibility to protect head of state.
That's
Let's
my,
go
that's
on
not
to
not
the
what
next
I said
question.
The policy was, ma'am.
Mr. Noriega, people are assuming that you knew that the rebels, so-called rebels, who they were, and I just want some yes or no answers. Did you know about the history of Louis Jodel Chamblain? Did you know he was the right hand of Emmanuel Constant, who is now up in New York? And did you know that he had murdered Mr. Anton Isnuri along with thousands of other Haitians? Did you know that before they re-entered Haiti in this last coup d'etat that took place? Did you know about him? Had you ever heard about him and his history?
Yes, I have.
Have you ever met him?
No.
Did you know about Mr. Guy Philippe? Did you know that he was a convicted drug dealer? And that there was he attempted a coup on President Aristide in 2002, and that he's responsible for killing 26 members of Lavalas. Had you heard about him before he entered Ghana Eve?
I've heard of him, but not.
You knew about his history as a convicted drug dealer?
I do not know the details.
Did you know he was had been a killer? That he was accused of killing?
I do not know the details.
Did you know he was in exile?
I do not know the details of the
Do
background.
You know that he was in exile?
I knew he was in exile.
Did
yes.
you know that he had returned and he was up in Ghana Eve in Cap Haitian?
I knew that he returned. I saw it on television.
Did you know about Mr. Jean Tatoon? And did you know he was a member of FRAP? And did you know about him before he came back into the country?
No, I've never heard of him.
Did you
I
know
hadn't
about
heard of him before
Had you heard that
recently.
He was involved in the massacre at Roberto?
I have heard that.
Have you
not,
ever met Mr.
In,
had you
detail,
met Mr. Guy Philippe before he returned to Haiti?
No, I've never met him.
Have you ever met Mr. Emmanuel Constant?
No, I haven't.
Did you know that he was the head of FRAP?
I've heard that.
Did you know that Mr. Chamblain was his right hand?
I've heard that from you.
Did
folks.
You know that Mr. Constant was hired and worked for the CIA?
No, I don't know that.
It was in the public domain. It was in the papers. You never knew it. You never heard it. Is you are?
I'm telling you, I don't know
You are
know
not
that.
Sworn in, but you're on record. Did you know that Mr. Constant worked for the CIA?
Ma'am, I'm telling you, we don't generally comment on these things, but I do not know that.
You don't generally, you are qualifying your statement.
I'm telling you that.
What you're telling me is you don't want to tell me
well,
that
you know.
Well, I'm
trying to tell you, but you won't give me an opportunity.
Okay, I think I know enough. Now, you knew that these thugs had returned and that they had taken over Ghana Eve and Cap Haitian. Did you at any time publicly denounce the thugs that you knew were thugs before they came in and invaded Haiti? Did you ever denounce them?
We said that these people should have no business in a political process and they should lay down their arms.
Did you ever attempt to make them lay down their arms or to tell them that they were in exile, they were crooks and criminals, and that they should not be in that country?
that they shouldn't be in Haiti. We've told them they should lay down their arms and go home. They have no part. These violent folks have no part.
But you did nothing to enforce it.
We're doing that now, ma'am.
Yeah, after the fact. After the fact, the same crooks and criminals and thugs and killers that you knew were in the country, that you did nothing to intervene with, you are now after the fact saying they should leave. Is that right?
Well,
we've said that
the time has passed. Pardon me, Mr. Chairman. I mean, Mr. Secretary, but I'm relieving you of having to answer that question.
No problem.
Thank you.
Congressmember Maxine Waters and before that, Congressmember Rangel questioning the Assistant Secretary of State, Roger Noriega. This is Democracy Now! I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. On the line with us live from Washington is Congressmember Maxine Waters. You spoke with President Aristide again yesterday in the Central African Republic. What did he tell you?
Well, I did speak with President Aristide. He told me that he had met with the president of the Central African Republic, that he was very nice, he was very kind, but he certainly let him know that he wished not to have all of the attention drawn to their country. They did not want to be bombarded with press, and that they would prefer that he not make statements to the press at this time.
Is President Aristide being held prisoner?
President Aristide is being held under guard, both by African and French soldiers.
Is he being held prisoner?
Well, he can't move around. He can't do what he wants to do. He can't leave. So I suppose that qualifies. They have said that the president has said that the call about what to do with him lies with the United States, that they are accommodating the United States.
And Congresswoman Waters, in the testimony yesterday, I was amazed at how little Assistant Secretary of State Roger Noriega claimed to know about the principles in Haiti. Were you surprised by how often he said that he didn't know about these folks?
I think despite the fact that he denied, we were able to extract from him, yes, on a few of those questions, he tried to avoid answering, and what was apparent was he knew a lot more than he was willing to share with us. That came through. He tried to qualify some of his answers. He tried to shade them, but he could not escape the fact that he did know them before, for the most part. He knew about them before they ever came back into the country. He knew who they were, and he knew that Constant was on the CIA payroll, even though he tried to qualify the answer on that. So I think in many ways, in his denials, he revealed himself.
Juan, you wrote in the Daily News this week in an article called How Do You Prove or Disprove a Military Coup by Your Own Government Against a Legally Elected Foreign Leader, where you talk about Roger Noriega and Otto Reich. Can you give us their background?
Roger Noriega was the chief of staff to Jesse Helms, who back during the first Haitian coup was probably in the Congress the most vociferous opponent of Aristide. So I find it impossible to believe that he doesn't know intimately the history of all of these figures since he worked for Jesse Helms. And, of course, before Roger Noriega's assistant secretary of state, you had Otto Reich in that position. He wasn't confirmed, and Otto Reich is over now at the National Security Council in charge of Western Hemisphere affairs. And both of these figures were involved in Venezuela just a couple of years ago in the situation that happened there with President Chavez, which is very similar. A military coup. The president supposedly resigns voluntarily. Only then a telephone call by President Chavez from his captivity alerts the Venezuelan people that he has actually been seized and arrested by the military. Very similar to what happened here in Haiti in the past few days.
But he had a military that supported him and in the end brought him back.
And the population came out into the streets and mobilized. And of course it was the Venezuelan military that was involved, whereas here you have the U.S. military directly.
Congressmember Waters, I know you have to go. I wanted you to hear this. It's the CEO of the Steele Foundation, Kenneth Kurtz. Steele Foundation, being the company that provided the security for Aristide has been in Haiti from 1998. He really did not want to answer any questions about the situation, at least one of Steele Foundation's security and their former military men went with Aristide to the Central African Republic. But as we questioned him about how unsafe the situation was for Aristide, this is one of the questions and answers.
Do you think the U.S. military could have made a difference at the end?
Well, I would probably turn that question around to you and ask, looking at the U.S. military coming in the day after he left, and that in itself ensuring some stability, do you think that if they would have come in a day before, that would have created stability?
Your response, Congressmember Waters.
Well, that's the point that we, many of us, tried to make yesterday. We had worked so hard to try and get the United States or the international community into Haiti when it was well known by everybody that these former military men were back in, out of exile with guns. They were openly, publicly threatening to kill the president. We said to Colin Powell, Condoleezza Rice, President Bush, and everybody, you've got to send in some help. You've got to stabilize Haiti. You've got to protect the people from these thugs. This gentleman is absolutely correct. If they had sent them in a day earlier, all of this perhaps could have been avoided.
Congressmember Waters, where do you go from here?
Well, we have to continue to work. We've got to continue to make sure that President Aristide is safe and that he is not left to languish in a place that does not want him and where he does not want to be. We've got to make sure that we unveil through investigation what took place in this coup d'etat led by our own country. We've got to pay attention to the attempts that are being made to reorganize the Haitian government, and we've got lots of work to do to try and help the people of Haiti and to try to give support to the kind of government that is not simply something that's owned and manipulated by the United States, but something that is organized by the people and we'll be looking out for the people.
Congressmember Waters, thanks for joining
us. You're welcome.
We are joined by Congressmember Barbara Lee, who also questioned the Assistant Secretary of State Noriega yesterday in the House hearing. Congressmember Lee, I was reading last night Paul Farmer's book, The Uses of Haiti, looking at Toussaint Louverture, one of the Haitian heroes. In 1802, right before Haitian independence, he went to meet with Napoleon's brother-in-law, a captain general. Instead, he thought he was going for peace talks. They captured him, Toussaint Louverture, and they took him to France, where he died an isolated and lonely death. Aristide, of course, as he left the country, leaving Toussaint Louverture Airport. That's the name of it. Do you see similarities here?
Well, you know, thank you for continuing to stay on this. I think yesterday's hearings pointed out some of the real similarities and continuity, unfortunate, with regard to just U.S. policy toward Haiti. When I asked Assistant Secretary Noriega about the safety of President and Mrs. Aristide and their family, he indicated that the United States could not ensure the safety of them. And we all know, you know, they're in a country where there's no United States embassy. It appears that they're very isolated, and it is appalling to me that while the president had no idea where they were going, the State Department was telling us Saturday night and Sunday morning that they were going to a destination of their choosing. Mm. So I'm very concerned about, one, the safety, security, health, and well-being of the president and family, and secondly, the Haitian people, because certainly the conditions there and the situation is very unstable. The Haitian people deserve a life that they've never had as a result of our policy. I've witnessed systematic, and I think all of us know that there has been systematic destabilization, systematic undermining of democracy in Haiti, systematic embargo and the disallowance of funding for humanitarian projects, for clean water efforts, for health education efforts. Haiti has the largest HIV/AIDS rates in the Caribbean. It's unconscionable that our country, because they, for whatever reason, did not like President Aristide, tried to not only destroy President Aristide, but also the entire country.
In the hearings yesterday, you made some comparisons to the situation in Iraq with Haiti. Could you review some of those for our viewers and listeners?
Well, you know, I think what we have to really understand is that this country continues to talk about democracy throughout the world and promote democracy. It will invade countries and kill people, such as in Iraq, to establish its form of democracy. I think what I learn and continue to believe is that it's only democracy where the United States can have some form of control. We've spent $87 billion plus in Iraq, not to mention the money that is going to be appropriated later this year in Iraq in terms of its reconstruction efforts and in terms of really fending off this guerrilla war. But yet, here in the Western Hemisphere, in a black nation, the poorest in the Western Hemisphere of 8 million people, we can't support democracy. We cannot allow the country to participate in the democratic process. Rather, we support and engage in and give a wink and a nod to thugs and murderers who want to overthrow the government. In essence, what I think we've done is supported a coup d'etat in Haiti and turned our back on democracy, and that to me is a shame.
Congressmember Lee, finally, how you addressed yesterday the issue of the ridiculing of the charges that Aristide was kidnapped, and explained why you think it's important to continually question the administration.
It's important that we continue to question the administration because clearly there's a big discrepancy there. Clearly, they're withholding, I think, the true facts. And clearly, President Aristide has communicated to many individuals here, and he has stated what has happened, and I believe that it's incumbent upon us to get the facts, to make sure that he's protected, and to not allow Colin Powell, which he said publicly that what we were saying was nonsense, that this is part of a conspiracy theory. You know, I think it's very shameful that they would question or at least make these allegations against members of Congress. Several of us are calling for a congressional investigation. I'm going to be introducing with Congressman Conyers and others a resolution to establish an independent commission to look at what happened. We've got to investigate this from a variety of points, and wherever we
finally
get our committees to look into this, the Intelligence Committee, the International Relations Committee, Judiciary, Independent Commission.
Congresswoman, I'd like to ask you one last question. Has been any discussion about the possibility of some members of Congress going to the Central African Republic to see President Aristide, since apparently some journalists are having trouble getting visas to get into the country?
There are discussions with regard to members of Congress participating in all kinds of activities with regard to investigating the facts around this, how we help bring the truth to the American people, and also to make sure that the president, his family, and his wife are secure and not under the type of cloud and the type of intimidation and the type of repression that we hope they're not dealing with. So I think it's very important for members of Congress and others to really look at what is going on with President Aristide. How we do that is going to be left up to how we figure out how to do it.
Congressmember Lee, I want to thank you very much for being with us. This is Democracy Now! When we return, we go from Haiti to Venezuela. Stay with us.
Como el aguardiente son la chica de trato injusto, como el aguardiente son la chica de trato injusto. Cuando ya se acaba el gusto, allí comienza el ratón.
allí comienza el ratón. Abrando la puerta que somos los cuantos que estamos tocando ya desde hace rato. Abrando la puerta que somos los cuantos que estamos tocando ya desde hace rato. Y dale, 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 dale a la tambora.
El cielo tiñe los albores de la aurora.
Y dale, 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 dale a ese furruco.
Y este aguinaldo con acento maracucho.
Con este aguinaldo se acaban las penas y lo traímos para alegrar la noche buena. Con este aguinaldo se acaban las penas y lo traímos para alegrar la noche buena. Y dale, 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 dale a la tambora.
Y el cielo tiñe los árboles de la aurora.
This is Democracy Now!, the War and Peace Report. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez.
Well, Venezuelan President Hugo Chavez is accusing the United States of spending over $1 million to help his opponents oust him from power. In a recent speech, Chavez said, quote, the government of Washington is using the money of its people to support not only opposition activities, but also but acts of conspiracy. Chavez called the documents that recently made public that detail how the U.S.-funded National Endowment for Democracy has backed projects and recall referendums in Venezuela. According to the Miami Herald, all of the money is going to opposition groups determined to unseat Chavez. One recipient was Sumate, which organized the recall petition against Chavez. Documents show Sumate received just over $50,000 from the National Endowment for Democracy, which is a private agency funded entirely by the U.S. government.
The State Department issued a statement 2 weeks ago categorically denying Chavez's accusations. The U.S. government has also denied it played a role in the 2002 coup attempt. In the summer of 2002, State Department's Inspector General's office released a report that determined the National Endowment for Democracy, or the U.S. government, did nothing to encourage the coup. But the report did state that NED, the National Endowment for Democracy, the Pentagon, and other U.S. assistance programs, quote, provided training, institution building, and other support to individuals and organizations understood to be actively involved in the brief ouster of the Chavez government. In Venezuela, the National Endowment for Democracy tripled its funding from about $250,000 to nearly $900,000 between 2000 and 2001 as opposition to Chavez intensified. Today, we're joined by a spokesperson for the National Endowment for Democracy, Chris Sabatini, a senior program officer there for Latin America and the Caribbean. We're also joined by Ava Gallinger of the Venezuela Solidarity Committee, running a new website, VenezuelaFOIA.info. You have posted, Ava Gallinger, NED documents that were recently made public. What do they say?
Yes, I've been working with investigative journalist Jeremy Bigwood to uncover these and declassify these documents. Basically, to date, we've received hundreds and hundreds of documents from the National Endowment for Democracy that evidence an intricate and meticulous pattern of financing to the Venezuelan opposition that basically is penetrating all sectors of Venezuelan society, from the agricultural sector to the education, to the legal, to the police, military, and also strengthening political parties, which seems to be one of the main agenda items of the National Endowment for Democracy. In April 2002, right after the coup, the State Department issued an additional special fund of $1 million to the National Endowment for Democracy just for the use of Venezuela-related projects. Now, all of this money was dispensed to opposition groups. There's actually no way for the National Endowment for Democracy to deny that all the funds were given and distributed to groups that participated in the coup, in the oil industry sabotage, and in the continued destabilization campaign against President Chavez. It's evidenced in the documents themselves.
Well, we're joined on the phone by Chris Sabatini, a senior program officer at the National Endowment for Democracy. Your response?
Well, first of all, just a correction. These weren't classified documents. Ava just said they were declassified. These are public documents. Mr. Chavez and people have been waving them around as if somehow these are secret documents. They're not. They're totally public, and it just details our grant relationship with a number of groups inside Venezuela, and it's a complete misnomer to call them declassified documents because they're never secret nor classified. Second, it's worth noting that, yes, we do maintain a grant program in Venezuela, and we've been working with a number of groups that are supporting human rights and constitutional rights. And just one thing that's mentionable is a group of Venezuelan congressmen came up last week to request the U.S. Congress to investigate the NEDS activities, and they were ridiculed by staffers on the Hill. And one of the documents they brought up was supposedly detailing this, according to them, sinister pattern of intervention. One of the things they mentioned was a grant to international human rights groups with, and I quote, the alleged purpose of preparing and defending human rights cases in the inter-American system. I just would like to know what's so sinister about defending human rights in the inter-American system or under international conventions that they seem to think is so evil.
Well, Mr. Sabatini, I would agree with you that funding human rights monitoring activity is a perfectly desirable goal. But the question would be, is it true that all of the funding has been going to opposition groups? Because if so, it would seem that the National Endowment for Democracy is, in essence, supporting particular political viewpoints in Venezuela, not simply pressing for greater democratic involvement.
Yeah, Juan, there's two answers to the question. First is most of the money is the projects we support are projects that are from groups, proposals we receive from groups that are seeking to promote and defend democratic processes and rights. We make those grants irrespective of their partisan or political affiliation or belief. The second is that there is a structural issue here, is that we respond to proposals that we receive from groups. We obviously can't force groups to take money. They send us proposals. And I've met with pro-Chavez groups, I've encouraged them to submit proposals, and they simply haven't. There's a de facto issue here in their solicitation of grants.
We're also joined on the phone in Caracas by Greg Wilpert, who is an independent journalist. And I'm wondering what the response is there to the publicizing of these documents now about where the NED is spending its money.
Well, people have been actually quite upset here. I mean, especially obviously on the side that supports the government. They feel like the opposition is receiving funds from the U.S., obviously. And there have been some protests at the U.S. Embassy here. And actually, there was a major demonstration that was organized last Sunday by Chavez forces, which was one of the largest demonstrations in a long time, and it was basically designed to, was a demonstration against U.S. intervention in Venezuela, and it was one of the largest I've seen here since I've been here.
I remember seeing a sign of a recent protest of an anti-Chavez demonstrator. He had a sign that said, Aristide is out, something like, Mr. Chavez, you're next.
Yes, actually, yeah, there are people in the opposition, clearly, who want the U.S. to be more involved. They want the U.S. government to help in getting rid of Chavez. And so there's clearly a dichotomy here between the two forces as to whether or not people want U.S. involvement. But I think, actually, a large part of the opposition actually is embarrassed by the support they've received from the U.S. government.
Eva, I saw you shaking your head just a minute ago when Chris Sabatini was talking. There was something you wanted to say?
I just wanted to point out that the involvement of the National Endowment for Democracy goes far beyond just an encouraging of groups to apply for grants. In fact, if you take a look at the documents available on the website, you'll see that almost every single grant was written by the same person. The language is all identical. It all talks about how Chavez is anti-democratic and how the basic purpose of these grants and what these parties and organizations are going to do with them is to somehow remove him from office or, you know, use them to implement democracy in Venezuela. So I think what would be interesting would be for Mr. Sabatini to explain how it is that all of the grants are written in the same way and seem to have been written by the same person who is fluent in the English language.
Well, I'd be happy to answer it. First of all, I would encourage, I never thought I'd say this, but I encourage anyone to please take a look at the website, because you're going to find that the truth is something far less sinister than Eva is trying to make you believe. In the grant documents and in trip memos and in emails, our overwhelming concern in the case of Venezuela is the level of political polarization that can result in violence. And that is not a partisan issue, but it's problems about the overall deterioration of democratic institutions over time in Venezuela, even before President Chavez was elected. And that has worsened, and it has to do with the level of polarization on both sides. And those sentiments are expressed very clearly in the documents that are on the website. Second of all, the documents, the grant documents that she refers to, are actually grant documents, the grant documents that we present. They're legal documents that we present to our board for their approval and then serve as the overall. It's actually quite a boring issue. So what we do is when we receive grants, we write them up. They're often in Spanish. We write them up so they can be presented to our board, which is a bipartisan board that includes Congressman Meeks. It includes a number of Democratic congressmen and retired Democratic administration officials, and so that they can understand, because they don't speak Spanish. So what you're looking at there when you look at a grant document is an English language legal document that we're presenting to our board.
Now, I'm sure you would agree, Mr. Sabatini, that in terms of the press in Venezuela, that while there may be some who criticize the Chavez government and its methods, the press in Venezuela has been remarkably robust and very oppositional to the government. Is there any concern in the National Endowment for Democracy that basically, as you say, in this polarized society, most of the press, with the exception of the government-owned station, is basically utilizing its free press status to bash the government on a daily basis?
That is a concern. And after the coup of April 2002, one of our grantees, the Instituto de Prensa y Sociedad, organized a meeting where they brought in people from Colombia, people from Argentina, people from Peru, to talk not just about freedom of expression and protection of journalist rights, but also to talk about professionalization of the media. There is no doubt that when you go there and you read the media, that they have contributed to the polarization in Venezuela in very, very troubling ways. This group, Instituto de Prensa y Sociedad, I should also say, has defended the rights of anti-Chavista or sort of the mainstream media journalists who have been attacked and received threats, as well as pro-Chavez media. They issue an annual report on attacks and threats against journalists and attacks against freedom of expression. And it includes attacks across the spectrum. There really needs to be, and that's what our grants have been trying to do, is create some central space where these issues can be discussed seriously, irrespective of partisan concerns.
Ava Gollinger.
Well, I think the important issue here is that these more than $1 million of financing have gone in the past couple of years. And when you talk about political polarization, I would question whether or not there would be such an extensive political polarization if they weren't so heavily financed by the National Endowment for Democracy.
I have a question as an American.
Chris Sabatini,
a quick question. As an American citizen, how it works in this country, if, say, the Democratic Party, the Bush opposition, got $1 million from the Venezuelan government?
First of all, we're not funding political parties. All of our political party support and support to unions is through our core institutes. One of them is the National Democratic Institute, which is related to our Democratic Party. Another one is the International Republican Institute, which is linked to a Republican Party. And then the Union Institute is the American Center for International Labor.
We have
Solidarity.
10 seconds.
And they conduct the programs with political parties. So political parties in Venezuela are not receiving U.S. taxpayer dollars.
Opposition, though.
Exactly.
Opposition, funding the opposition, groups that are aligned with the opposition. But I'm going to have to leave it there, and we'll pick it up another day. I want to thank you for being with us, Chris Sabatini of National Endowment for Democracy, and Ava Gollinger of the organization Venezuela, FOIA.info, and Venezuela Solidarity Committee. That does it for today's program. Our website to get all the latest developments on what's going on in Haiti, Venezuela, and other places is democracynow.org. There you can join our daily digest as well. Democracy Now! Is produced by Mike Burke, Sharif Abdelkaddous, Anna Nagara, Elizabeth Press, Jeremy Scahill. Mike DeFilippo is our engineer. If you'd like to get a copy of the show, you can call 1-800-881-2359. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez for another edition of Democracy Now!